Back chat.
Politics and current affairs.
Back chat.
Your alternative to talk back.
Proudly supported by the Judith Nielsen Institute.
It's Saturday, May 22nd, and you're listening to Backchat, where we break down the news you don't want to miss. Before we begin today, we'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the Gadigal land and pay our respects to elders past and present. I'm Chantelle Alcoury.
And I'm Eamon Snow. Coming up on the show today, we're going to be looking at staffing issues with nurses and celebrity social justice.
But first, we're talking about yet another round of budget cuts to our universities with Sydney Uni Education Officer Tom Williams.
And as always, we'd love to hear from you. Text us in on 0409 945 945 or you can tweet us at BackchatFBI.
It is absolutely laughable. The woman's off her tree.
Backchat, your alternative to talk back.
Now, arts degrees may be the butt of so many of our uni jokes, but students who actually did subjects in this major know just how enriching and passion-filled these faculties are. And once again, they're under threat.
Over the years, universities have been cutting more from fields the government sees as less employable, ironically affecting the livelihood of thousands of staff, not to mention that student education is suffering for it.
Last week, we saw another 10% cut from uni funding. And right now, Sydney Uni Education Officer Tom Williams joins us now to discuss who will lose when these cuts are passed down. Tom, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Now, we've seen recent cuts to the Faculty of Arts and Social Sciences, or FASS, at UCID, as well as a bunch of other unis. What will be the most devastating impact of the latest budget cuts, in your opinion?
Oh, gosh. Look, I think at the moment, arts especially is very much down to the bone. I don't think there's a very much like one thing I can point to specifically, but I know that staff especially are going to be feeling the brunt, you know, of these cuts. Like, quality of education is taking a hit already. Like, arts departments are proposing cutting essays, degrees aren't being fulfilled, and yeah, it's. I think what we're going to see next is really just a massive wave of cuts to staff and then to the quality of education.
Well, where can students go if they want to pursue arts education if faculties continue to be merged or shut down?
It's a good question. I don't really have an answer for that. In Australia, with like public universities being like gutted across the board, it's a very difficult like question to answer. I don't think there really is anywhere.
And we know, obviously, that arts is facing some pretty serious threats, but what other faculties are starting to come under threat in addition to the arts?
I think universities are kind of realising that they can't just put all their burden on the one faculty in arts. With this, like, 10% budget cut, all of them are going to face it, even with the changes to fees. Like, science, engineering, all the other faculties that were proposed to be, like, having their fees... their fees cut... they all took a cut to their funding. I think it was about a 16% cut. So it will be felt across the board.
You're listening to Backchat on FBI Radio 94.5. If you've just joined us, we're talking to UCID Education Officer Tom Williams about recent university budget cuts. Tom, what's the damage of unis just churning out degrees instead of focusing on quality education?
There's sort of a short-term effect and there's kind of a long-term effect as well. In the short term, it means that like degrees mean a lot less, and it means that staff can get cut pretty like happily. When you're not focusing on education, you can supplement it with like nice badges or you know nice terms and strategy as well. But in the long run, it's a pretty clear trend of accrediting a small elite, probably corporate life, accrediting them with degrees that don't mean a whole lot but are going to be really wildly inaccessible, which I think in the long term is just a clear way of enforcing class systems, to be honest.
And last year we saw a massive 35,000 job losses in the education sector, with most of those impacting tertiary education. What happens to staff if even more cuts happen down the line?
More cuts mean more staff go. It's a pretty horrible reality. Staff already have like heaps of wage theft. They've got really, really difficult conditions. They're massively overworked. Like the standard at the arts is like you're expected to mark an entire transcript in like 8 minutes. And that's what's just expected for now. I don't know what it'll go down to when there's even more cuts. I really do not know how staff are going to be, you know, how the universities are going to expect staff to keep up.
Yeah, and lastly, what needs to happen to ensure that better quality education for uni students is ensured for their future?
I think, to be honest, it's just more like there needs to be more funding, and there needs for like these cuts need to be reversed at a federal level and at a campus level. The money needs to stop going to the VCs, it needs to stop going to management, and it needs to go back to staff. Like, these degrees need to be brought down in price, and staff need to be compensated adequately. Like, the priorities at the moment seem to be the whole list of things that university does, like, staff and education seem to be last, which is, like, on a campus level, that needs to be reversed immediately. And I don't know if that can happen with the for-profit universities at the moment that we have. And on a federal level, there needs to be adequate funding for universities.
It's crazy that we're having to suggest all this stuff now rather than it just being the norm. But Tom, thank you so much for your insight and coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me again.
That was Sydney Uni Education Officer Tom Williams speaking about how universities are handling the recent budget cuts and how it has affected both students and staff. If you want to show your support for the arts, so you can go to a protest at UCID's Eastern Avenue this Wednesday at 1 p.m.
But don't go anywhere, because up next, we have an investigation into staffing issues impacting nurses in our public hospitals. But right now, we've got a song for you. A real smooth one. This is Sunny by Big Pig.
Back chat.
Text 0409 945 945.
If you've ever worked in hospitality or retail, then you'd know how much it sucks when someone chucks a sickie and leaves you to close up alone on a busy Saturday night.
But for nurses working in New South Wales, if there aren't enough people working on a ward, critical mistakes can be made, leading to injuries, exhaustion, or just plain burnout.
This week, our producer Charles Rushforth investigates patient-to-nurse ratios and how they affect New South Wales public hospitals and patients.
Hey, Charles from Backchat here. Last week was International Nurses Day, which celebrates the efforts of nurses all over the world. And it got me thinking, what exactly do nurses do on an average day-to-day?
I could give you a quick rundown, really, like a normal day shift would be. You get handover, you say good morning to the patient. They're probably in bed. You're asking them if they want to sit up for breakfast or get out of bed.
My name is Ricardo Quirk, and I'm a registered nurse.
And you start giving them tablets, and then showering, and then all the other things. So dressings, getting them ready for theatre. Essentially, it's just like I do so many things as a nurse that they don't really, you know, they touch on it at university. But really, you start working, you find out that you're the secretary. You're answering phones. They don't teach you how to talk to intimidating doctors and dealing with egos and things like that, but you basically do everything. You're the housekeeper, the medication giver, the specialist caregiver. So you're time managing a million things between all your different patients and stuff like that. So, you know, you're pretty much getting pulled in every direction.
To contain some of the chaos of Ricardo's day-to-day, or depending on the shift, night-to-day, staffing on wards is determined by a patient-to-nurse ratio.
Yep. So generally on most wards, it's 1 to 6. But because I work on a cardiothoracic surgical ward, it's currently 1 to 5. And I believe that they fought hard with the union to get that.
Cardiothoracic surgery is the term for surgery of the cardiovascular system. And it ultimately results in patients that require lots of care, which is partially why Ricky's ward was successful in negotiating a better patient-staff ratio.
Drains and IV lines. And so, yeah, they apparently fought to make it so they had a reduced patient load because you would be so time-consumed with these people.
Patient-to-nurse ratios are common practice in private hospitals across the country, but they're not used in public hospitals in New South Wales. However, this month, unions have been pushing to change that.
Yeah, so when we talk about ratios, we talk about how many patients are allocated to a nurse.
This is Skye Roma. She works as a secretary for the New South Wales Nurse and Midwives Association at the Prince of Wales Mental Health Branch. But she's also an enrolled nurse there.
I've been an enrolled nurse for coming up to 9 years now. I guess the biggest thing that we're trying to push is to get safe ratios. So that would be kind of 1 to 3 in ED in a lot of acute settings, but 1 to 4 across most wards. You know, in metropolitan and in rural hospitals, nurses are having, you know, 5 and up to 20 patients per nurse.
Skye says that she's seen understaffing affect the level of care that nurses can ultimately provide, and even turn wards into dangerous places.
It makes the ward very, very dangerous. I work in mental health, and, you know, when we're understaffed or we don't have adequate nurse to patient ratios, we see an increase in violence and aggression. We have staff that are injured. We have other consumers that are injured. It also doesn't allow enough nurses to, I guess, give the best care that we possibly could.
Skye experienced all of this when she was attacked by a patient in 2019.
So, yeah, I personally was injured by a consumer in 2019. But, yeah, they didn't want to be on the unit, and they weren't discharged. So at 1 o'clock in the morning, they decided to have a go. So, yeah. Had 2 spinal surgeries in the last 2 years, and I'm still recovering from that. I've still got ongoing pain. Yeah, it does take a toll.
It's not just better staffing models nurses are looking for in New South Wales. They want clarification about their pay too. Nurses in New South Wales receive a 2.5% wage rise as part of their award. Last year, though, nurses took a pay freeze thanks to the coronavirus pandemic. This year, nurses have been told that the wage rise will only be 1.04% and won't factor in their superannuation contribution.
Yeah, can you talk to me about that?
So part of that 2.5% includes, I guess, the increase of super contributions every year. But this year, the state government have minus that from our pay increment, and they're asking nurses and midwives to pay that, even though technically we got a pay cut last year and we're getting a pay cut again this year.
Skye says that nurses are literally crossing the border to states like Victoria and Queensland that have implemented staffing ratios and are paying nurses better.
Losing nurses to Queensland because they're getting ratios and they've got a pay increase. Or on the border of, you know, New South Wales and Victoria, they're crossing the border. Why would you work here if you're not being treated as well as they are in the other states?
In April, Skye, along with other members of her union, met with the Ministry of Health to discuss implementing staffing ratios at New South Wales public hospitals. They got knocked back, and Skye never really knew why. So Backchat asked for clarification from New South Wales Health, and they actually responded to us in a statement. A New South Wales Health spokesperson told Backchat that the current nursing hours per patient day system, which is currently being used, is a far more flexible ratio which enables hospitals to increase staffing where needed to ensure safe and effective care. They went on to say that the government is investing in an additional 5,000 nurses and midwives over a 4-year period in a record $2.8 billion boost to frontline staff, which, I quote, far exceeds what is needed to deliver the ratios being called for by the nurses' union.
It takes a toll. I mean, you miss out. We already work 365 days a year, and we miss out on, you know, Christmas and Easter and all those kind of great events that the rest of the community get to enjoy, but we miss them, and then on top, we're kind of run into the ground.
This is all still a developing situation, one we'll be sure to keep you updated on as we investigate. I'm Charles Rushforth, reporting for Backchat.
That was Backchat producer Charles Rushforth looking at the fight to introduce safe nurse-to-patient ratios at New South Wales public hospitals.
This week, we heard about the death of a 7-year-old girl in the waiting room of Perth Children's Hospital, and she waited around for 2 hours before it was too late to address her parents' very valid concerns about her condition. So there's a lot we're seeing about this nurse to patient ratio and issues that are continuing.
Yeah, that's just such a devastating story. The first thought that came to mind when I heard that was that no one should feel so helpless and hopeless when you're in a hospital waiting room. You know, like, this is just not where we should be. And reports are actually saying that there's a chance that this could have been prevented. This is all off the back of a medical journal finding just last week that showed nurse to patient ratio legislation in Queensland has actually saved both lives and money.
Yeah, hopefully there's some change that we see soon so that we don't have to hear stories like this again. Stay tuned, because up next, we're talking about celebrity activism, about what's happening in Palestine, and whether celebrities should pick their battles or use their fame for good.
But before that, we're going to hit play on this one. You might have caught her show last night at the Red Rattler. This is Jeswa with Medusa. Language warning.
Yeah, deck it or peck it or...
Okay, so you jump on Instagram and you see your celebrities, the celebrities that you're following, posting about change in a particular issue. How do you react?
I react two ways. It's half the time I just feel like going shush, but then at the same time it's like, should these people be using their platform for good? Activism from celebrities is definitely something we're seeing more and more of. And while some are begging for them to speak out and use their platform, others think they should shut up and stay in their lane, which is exactly the problem, as I said, that I face.
Well, if you've got thoughts on celebrity activism, especially around what's happening in Palestine, then text us in on 0409 945 945.
And now we've got Backchat's executive producer, Millie Roberts, joining us in the studio to break this one down. How's it going, Millie?
Good. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
It's lovely. I love the attention. How are you guys?
Good. So can you tell us what's happening with, you know, we heard about Bella Hadid and her activism around Palestine and some backlash that she got. Can you explain that for us?
So absolutely. For those not in the know, Bella Hadid is an American model who is actually half Palestinian. So in response to everything that's been going on in Israel and Palestine at the moment, she went to a protest. She was papped there showing her support. And then she was cancelled by the literal state of Israel via Instagram. It is unheard of. We've never seen a situation like this. So it's absolutely bonkers to see that unfold.
The Twitter handle was literally at Israel, and they they literally added her.
It's crazy. So I think for me, what this has drawn attention to is kind of the role of celebrity and activism, and the distinguishment between the cases where celebs are kind of going off what they know or what they've kind of read versus having an actual lived experience or connection to the stories that they're fighting for. Because we've seen the reverse of this, like, have you guys been keeping up on what's happening on Twitter? Multiple celebrities who are kind of like voicing their opinion, but it's unfounded and not really a voice of authority.
Yeah, I think we see that with a lot of issues. We saw that with Black Lives Matter. And my thing is, it's crazy with social media how much you're seeing fans of these celebrities obviously hold them accountable, which is great, but also like begging them to speak up on issues where I don't see that. There's just some celebrities where I'm like, I don't want to hear your opinion. I don't need Charlie D'Amelio to tell me what she thinks. Or, you know, obviously raising awareness is great, but forcing them to speak up about certain issues is unusual. What do you think, Eamon?
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, with the Bella Hadid thing, it's like, well, you have absolutely every right to comment on something like this, given her ancestry is directly affected by this kind of stuff. But then you've got the other side of it where it's like they're talking based on almost an obligation, and people see right through that. But then you mentioned you've got fans asking, is a polite way to put it, demanding, threatening to cancel if they don't, that kind of stuff. We've got this really weird Twitter online climate now where everyone just wants to go. So it's like, this is almost a beast of our own creation. If you've got all these, you know, angry mobs on Twitter demanding people have opinions, you're going to get this stuff.
Yeah. I think a lot of celebrities are like choosing the avenue of just being like, I just want world peace, where fans are like, they see right through that. They're going to be like, look, that is not adding any substance to the conversation. It's not important. And also this issue is, there's an oppressed and oppressor. You can't really be like, oh, peace on both sides when it's an issue like this.
Which is exactly what we saw in the last fortnight. So the Pakistani activist Malala, as well as climate activist Greta Thunberg, and actress who has an opinion on absolutely everything, Jamila Jamil, all got called out for having poor takes of neutrality on the Israel-Palestine crisis. And I don't know, it's just like when you see similar examples to Bella Hadid, such as Kim Kardashian, who for years has been trying to raise awareness around the Armenian genocide and changing public opinion on that. If you don't have a connection and you don't have a take, then maybe you're just better off not saying anything at all. Because Chantal, I know you're a huge Keeping Up with the Kardashians fan. Maybe you could touch on historically some of the examples that Kim Kardashian has spoken on the Armenian genocide about.
Yeah, well, they did like an entire episode about what's going on there. And she was speaking up about, you know, acknowledging it as something that actually happened, which in history many haven't. She spoke to the Prime Minister. She's done a lot of work with that and things like prison reform. And I think that's great if there's a clear passion for it. Like, she's clearly passionate where she's dedicated a big portion of her life to it. But then do you see these posts of other celebrities just being like, I just want world peace, like it's going to do anything. And sharing resources is great. I think during Black Lives Matter, that was the biggest thing of sharing how to, you know, send money or support, that kind of thing. Yeah, what do you think, Eamon?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like, don't just speak because you're famous. Speak because you care or you're passionate. And I think that's where a lot of people get lost. I reckon a good rule for celebrities, if there's any celebrity out there listening and you're about to tweet on something you don't know about, if in doubt, shut your mouth, please. Yeah. But also, if you have meaningful to contribute, then please do.
Yeah. Well, I just want to end on this. I saw a tweet that said Stormy Jenner's been weirdly quiet about what's going in Palestine. And I agree. She should be speaking up.
More toddlers speaking up.
Yes. Dream Kardashian, where are you? Thanks so much for joining us, Millie. That's all the time we have on the show today. A massive thank you to our producers, Charles Rushforth, Justina Bastar, Millie Roberts again, and Vanessa Lim. This has been Backchat, your go-to wrap for news and current affairs.
And of course, you can catch us same time next week, 9:30 a.m. But stay tuned right now for Limbs Akimbo. We're going to leave you with a song made during lockdown last year. This is Sydney's Greta Now with Kicking in the Dark. See ya.